Well, vasectomy is one of the many options for family planning, but what happens when a couple decides they want to get pregnant? Our guest joins us now to talk about vasectomy reversal and also talk about male infertility. Dr. Daniel Williams, with us by phone today, an associate professor in the Department of Urology at the UW School of Medicine and Public Health, fellowship trained in male reproductive medicine and surgery, and specializes in all aspects of male infertility. His research interests include male fertility in men with cancer, as well as the effects of aging and the environment on male reproductive potential. I hope you'll join in with your questions and comments today. Sometimes it's difficult to talk about these kinds of things, but don't be bashful. Please join in with your own questions, comments, or experiences. The number to call, 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at ideas@wpr.org. Or you can go ahead and post on our Facebook page. We'd love to hear from you. Dr. Daniel Williams, welcome to the show. Thank you so much for talking with us today.
Thank you so much for having me, Larry. It's a pleasure to be here.
Yeah, let's start with some basics about the procedure of vasectomies. How common are they? How many maybe are performed in the U.S. Each year? And then I'm wondering how many are actually get reversed.
And that's a great question. When couples are done with family planning, there are a number of different options for them to reduce the risk of having an unintended pregnancy. And on the male side, the vasectomy is really the most surefire way of reducing that risk. When you look at the numbers in the U.S. every year, they do vary, but numbers can range from 300,000 to even upwards of 500,000 vasectomies every year in the U.S. As a method of for birth control for couples. So it's a fair amount of men who are undergoing the procedure. It still trails the number of women who are undergoing fertility-related procedures to reduce unintended pregnancies, but it's a very common method of male birth control.
I actually know someone who they had two children. He had a vasectomy, and then his wife died, and eventually he remarried, and his new wife wanted to have a child, so he had the vasectomy reversed. She became pregnant. They had a child, and then he went back and had the vasectomy again.
Yeah, that is a story that happens occasionally. You bet.
And it can, obviously it worked in that case. So it's something that can work for others as well.
It, absolutely. So when men undergo a vasectomy, they're counseled that a vasectomy should be intended to be a permanent method of birth control. And unfortunately, in the world that we're living in, there can be unexpected events and changes that are unforeseen that are coming around the corner. Now, for some couples do decide that they want to have more children. They had their vasectomy, and they thought they were done having kids, and they want to have more. But for many other situations, there can be, you know, a tragedy like the loss of a partner, or the change of a partner. A couple separates, and a man finds a new partner who he wishes to start a second family with or have more children with. And when they're in a situation like that, there are essentially two strategies. One strategy would be to do a vasectomy reversal. The other strategy is to obtain sperm from the testicle area that can be used for the advanced fertility treatments called in vitro fertilization. And there are advantages and disadvantages to both approaches, but they are both very effective. And ultimately, it becomes the individual couple's decision on what path they wish to choose.
I know another couple who were trying to have children for a long, long time and assumed it was the problem was the wife. But in fact, they eventually found out the problem was the husband. And And it was an issue that I just couldn't, I guess, and this is some years back, couldn't be resolved. And so they wound up adopting. But they went through, it was a very traumatic, long time, you know, over a few years of their lives as they tried to have children. And they stayed married and all that, but there were, it was emotionally a very difficult time.
Yes, the fertility journey for most couples can be a very stressful one, a very emotional one, and you're right. And historically, it was oftentimes thought that fertility was only a female problem. You know, how could a man have a fertility problem? He's a man, right? But if you really look at the numbers, when couples are faced with fertility concerns, about a third to half of the time, there is a female factor only that's identified as the primary problem. But about a third of the time, there's a male factor only that's identified, meaning a problem with some aspect of the reproductive health, whether it's the sperm quality, the sperm production. And then the remainder of the time, there can be a combination of both male and female factors that are affecting things. So in looking at the numbers, about half the time, there is a male factor that's either the sole cause or a contributing cause to that couple's fertility problems.
Yeah. Dr. Daniel Williams, our guest today. Questions for him, I hope you'll join in at 800-642-1234. Email us at ideas@wpr.org or post on our Facebook page. Certainly love to hear from you. I just want to go back to vasectomies for just a second before we take some calls. It's a fairly simple procedure, is it not? That it's involves tying some tubes up or cutting or blocking them in some fashion.
That's right. For most men, it's a very straightforward procedure. As you might imagine, most men aren't super excited about having it done because it, even though it's a minor procedure, it's arguably a procedure that's on, you know, one of, if not the most sensitive part of a man's body. And it can also be an emotional time as well. When an individual or a couple has finished having kids, it's, you know, moving on from one stage of life to the next. But the procedure itself is, for most men, a straightforward procedure that's performed in the office under a local anesthetic. Some men, there's also the option to take some medication to help them relax during the procedure. But generally, it's a procedure that's performed with a local anesthetic with a small opening on the skin, one on each side, and something that has a relatively quick recovery time as well. Men do need to behave and not do anything too strenuous for at least a few days, if not up to a week after the procedure. But for the vast majority of procedures, men heal very well and have good outcomes.
And the reverse, I expect that's a little more intricate.
It is. So when we're talking about the anatomy of the vas deferens tube itself is not much bigger than the size of a piece of spaghetti, for example. And so it's and actually there's a tube within the tube. So when you're blocking the tube with a vasectomy, that's a relatively straightforward procedure. But when the decision is made to try to reverse it, it is a little more challenging for sure. The preferred approach to a vasectomy reversal is to use an operating microscope where you can really zoom in and magnify the structures that you're looking at in order to get the best outcomes and to precisely sew the two ends of the tubes back together.
Yeah, and if it fails, what are the common causes or reasons for it?
After a vasectomy reversal?
Yeah.
Yeah, good question. So in general, if a man has a routine vasectomy reversal where you're sewing the two ends back together under the microscope, there should be a very high chance of having sperm returned back into the semen. Most of the data, including our experience, is that well over 90 to 95% of men after a microsurgical vasectomy reversal should have sperm back in the semen. Now, when it gets into the chances of then getting pregnant after a vasectomy reversal, there are a number of potential factors. So it's not just the presence or absence of sperm. It can be the amount of sperm, the quality of the sperm, how long it's been since the vasectomy, as far as the impact on the quality of the sperm and the vasectomy reversal, and as well as any known or unknown female factors. So, the age of the partner, the age of the woman, can also affect pregnancy outcomes following a vasectomy reversal as well. So there can be a number of things that affect the pregnancy results, but most of the data shows that pregnancy outcomes are quite good.
Are quite good. You know what? We're going to take a quick break, Dr. Williams. Dr. Dan Williams will be back right after this look at the news. Stay with us. Thanks so much for joining us today on the Ideas Network. I'm Larry Mueller, and we're talking today about male infertility. We're talking about vasectomies, reversing them, taking a look at men with cancer and how that may affect fertility issues as well, with our guest, Dr. Daniel Williams, Associate Professor in the Department of Urology at the UW-Madison School of Medicine and Public Health, trained in male reproductive medicine and surgery, specializes in all aspects of male infertility. His research interests includes male fertility in men with cancer, as well as the effects of aging and the environment on male reproductive potential. Join in. Number to call, 800-642-1234. Email us at ideas@wpr.org or post on our Facebook page. Dr. Williams, we have callers online with questions. I want to go to the phones here, and let's go with Bob first. Bob, what's on your mind? Bob in Madison.
Hi. When I had a vasectomy when I was 26, and at that time they had a sperm bank in Denver where I got it, and I just stored some sperm before I got the vasectomy in case I changed my mind. Have you discussed that?
We haven't talked about that yet. That seems to be a bit easier than a reversal, Dr. Williams. What do you think?
Yeah, that's a very valid option. When I talk to my patients about the vasectomy procedure itself, and even though it's thought to be a permanent method of birth control, I do offer men the discussion about should plans change in the future, the three primary options, one being as what you did, Bob. One option is to bank sperm and freeze it prior to the vasectomy. And what's amazing about the sperm freezing technology is that once the sperm are frozen, they can really be used anytime in the future with fertility treatements. It can be used a year later, 10 years later. There are reports in the fertility literature of frozen sperm being used almost 25 years after it was frozen. So that's one option for a lot of men, to have sperm frozen as backup should plans change. Really for a peace of mind that if there's a new opportunity, that at least I don't have to undergo another procedure.
Yeah. Bob, thanks. I'm glad you brought that up. Appreciate your call.
You bet.
And again, you can join us at 800-642-1234 with your own questions or comments. One of the research interests you have is fertility in men with cancer. What are some of the maybe the cancers and treatments that most commonly affect men's fertility?
Yeah, thank you for asking that question, Larry. The world of what we call oncofertility, so oncology being cancer and the fertility world, it is a growing one on both the male and the female side. So the advances in cancer treatments and technologies, whether it be the cancer surgeries, the cancer chemotherapy regimens and radiation regimens, has really advanced to the point where when you know, young men of reproductive age are faced with a life-threatening cancer, the majority of those men live. And they live well into their reproductive years. And so the historical focus of cancer treatments was survival, and of course still is. That is the primary focus, of course. But because of the advances in treatment, quality of life following cancer treatments has become very important. And for young men and young women with cancer, the ability to have children in the future is a very important quality of life aspect. So briefly, when a young man is faced with the cancer diagnosis, and especially if they're going to need chemotherapy, radiation, surgery, something that could potentially affect their fertility in the future, that the primary strategy in those men to help them preserve their future fertility is to, when possible, freeze their sperm. And once those sperm are frozen, they can be used in the future with fertility treatments, similar to what our previous caller, Bob, was reporting with prior to his vasectomy. Unfortunately, when people are diagnosed with cancer, that's a very, very emotional and very stressful time. And for a lot of young men, the ability to have children in the future may not be the first thing on their mind. You know, they may be primarily thinking that, oh, my gosh, you know, am I going to live or am I going to die? But the ability to preserve fertility for these young men and their families is a very important part of the comprehensive cancer treatment.
Well, I think it's great. And frankly, if you have cancer, your sperm is not, I guess, not going to be affected by that cancer, that you wouldn't be passing that along.
That's the general consensus, correct. You know, as much as what we know about cancer, we're every year learning more and more about it and the genetics of cancer. Certainly there are some scenarios, some cancer scenarios that may run in families and may have a genetic component to them. But for kind of a random sporadic cancer, fathering a child does not, through this type of technology, does not necessarily bring with it an increased or decreased risk of the offspring having cancer. You know, really no higher than should the man have been able to get pregnant without these treatments.
Interesting. Tom in Burlington has a question. Hi, Tom.
I have basically two questions, but the first one is about the bicycle seat for boys and girls. But my boys' bicycle seats, from what I understand, have a vein that goes in the middle of the seat to keep the boy's butt from bouncing on that seat and becoming infertile. And with people buying bicycles for kids this Christmas, maybe you might make people aware of that fact. And then my next question is about how many years can a man be fertile if he's healthy? Up until what age do you know about?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, those are two great questions. So with regards to the bicycle seats, where that oftentimes comes into play is that the bicycle seats can put pressure on the groin area called the perineum. That's kind of the area where the bike seats rest. And if it's a poorly fitting bike seat, it can put pressure on the nerves and the blood vessels that can go down to the genital area. There's not specific data that I'm aware of that connects a cause and effect between bike seats and sperm production or sperm quality. But in some men, it can affect sexual function if there's nerve damage or if there's damage to the blood vessels due to an improperly fitting bike seat. That's an excellent question. And then your second question is regarding for how long can men be fertile? And we do know that on the female side, as women age, the what's called the ovarian reserve, the number of eggs that are available to be fertilized goes down with over time. And while not impossible, when women are over 40, it becomes more and more difficult year by year over the age of 40 for women to get pregnant. The same effect is not seen to that degree in men as it is to women. In general, for most men, our sperm production slowly declines over time, beginning in our late 20s, early 30s. So some of it depends on what men are starting with. If you have a man who, when he's younger, has a very high sperm production, for example, and that slowly goes down over time, he may be able to be fertile for quite a long time. On the flip side, if a man, when he's younger, is already kind of borderline on his sperm production, his fertility may decline more significantly over time than someone else's. But in general, sperm production stays much more stable than the female fertility side.
So it's not, let's see, out of the realm of possibility that even, as let's say, a 70-year-old man could be a father?
It is in the realm of possibility, for sure. When you start getting into issues of what we call advanced paternal age, it segues a little bit more to sperm quality and the genetics of fertility. There is evidence that both on the male and female side that certain genetic abnormalities and birth concerns increase as both the age of the mother and the age of the father increase. So while, yes, older men and older women can bear children, the potential risk, health risk to the offspring does go up the older the man and the older the woman.
Tom, thank you so much for calling. Appreciate your call. And you can join in, too, at 800-642-1234. We're talking about vasectomies, reversing them. We're talking about infertility with our guest, Dr. Daniel Williams from the Department of Urology at the UW-Madison School of Medicine and Public Health. You mentioned genetics has come up a couple of times. You mentioned, I'm wondering, as it affects male infertility, is there a genetic component to that or a potential genetic component?
There can be. Excellent question. So when a man is being evaluated for fertility, there are times where some men have severely low sperm counts or sometimes even zero sperm in their semen. And there are situations where that can be attributed to certain genetic abnormalities or certain genetic conditions. One very classic genetic condition that can result in the absence of sperm in the semen is cystic fibrosis. And so the disease cystic fibrosis is one in which you need to have two copies of the cystic fibrosis gene in order to have the disease cystic fibrosis. But there are many men and women who are carriers of this cystic fibrosis gene, but may not have the disease. But in some men, depending on their carrier status of the cystic fibrosis gene, it may result in the absence of the vas deferens or some sort of blockage within their reproductive tract.
Oh. That's
one type of situation where genetics can come into play. Other situations can be genetic issues or genetic conditions that result in failure for sperm to be produced by the testicles. And those can be very challenging situations to diagnose and sometimes how to treat. Depending on those genetic conditions, there are times where even if there's no sperm in the semen, we may be able to actually do a fertility procedure where we can find sperm inside the testicle itself that can be used for fertility treatments, even though there's not sperm in the semen. So, but yes, there are certain genetic conditions that come into play. And lastly, what's interesting about many of these genetic conditions that affect the sperm production is that usually they are new genetic conditions, meaning they're not necessarily something that a father would pass on to the son that would result in a low sperm count. They're oftentimes just kind of new random genetic abnormalities that occur that happen to affect the sperm production.
Interesting. Louise in Milwaukee has a question. Let's go there. Hi, Louise.
Yeah, hi. As I'm listening, I'm wondering, recently I heard that male sperm count has gone down significantly, up to 50%. in the developed world? Is this true? And if it is, what is causing this?
Yeah,
that's a terrific question, Louise. Thank you. So there was a recent study that was published that looked at across the globe, not just in the U.S., the average sperm counts in a lot of men. And when comparing to published studies in the past, the overall sperm counts for a lot of fertile men seems to be declining. And it brings up a great question as to why that is. And so while it's not fully understood the exact reason or reasons, there are some postulated reasons that might be affecting things. Things that ranging from men's overall health. For example, we unfortunately in our country and in others across the world, we have an epidemic of obesity. And obesity has been associated with impaired semen parameters, meaning lower sperm counts. Recreational drugs, things like smoking, heavy alcohol use has been associated with fertility issues. A lot of medications that are prescribed to treat certain conditions can have a negative impact on fertility. And then even more so, a challenging question to research is what impact does the environment have on both male and female reproduction? A number of years ago, there were concerns about plastics and some of the chemicals in plastic containers, specifically a chemical called the bisphenols. That's very prevalent in a lot of the plastics that are used for storing food and waters and drinks. And what impact, if any, do these chemicals in our environment have? So it's something that when this report came out has certainly raised the public health concern and have prompted a lot of researchers to try to look into this and see what items and conditions might be affecting things.
Yeah. Louise, thank you so much. Another great question. Let's turn to another caller. Bridget in Sparta, you're up. Thank you for calling.
Louise, thank you so much. Another great question. Turn to another caller, Bridget.
Hello, Bridget. Are you there?
I am here. I am just wondering if Viagra has any effect on fertility one way or another, if it's helpful or detrimental. It's just some information.
Thank you for calling.
That's a great question. So if I heard the question correctly, it's about these medications that are designed to help men with sexual function. And,
yeah.
What Viagra. Impact, if any, does that have on fertility? Good question. To our knowledge, those medications that are designed to help with the erections do not have any known impact on sperm production or sperm quality. A little more specifically, that there's really not a specific indication that if a man has a problem with his sperm production or a man has a problem with sperm quality, that he should be taking those medications to help with fertility. But as a second point to that, when couples are faced with fertility, it can be a very, very stressful time for that couple. And a lot of couples who we see, the man does develop difficulty with sexual function, sexual activity during the pursuit to get pregnant. Sexual activity, theoretically should be something fun and pleasurable for couples. And for many couples who are faced with fertility, it almost becomes more of a burden, almost like a job. And for some men, that makes performance difficult. And these medications, the Viagra-type medications, can actually help a couple when the man is struggling with sexual function during these fertility pursuits.
Dennis in Two Rivers, we'll turn to you. Hi, Dennis.
Hi. I don't know if it's a myth or whatever, but I've heard things about, like, there's some form of estrogen in soy products and other things. So I wonder, well, is there a myth as far as what effect soy products or other things like that have on men?
Another great question from the listeners. So an estrogen, interestingly, both men and women make the hormones testosterone and estrogen, but in different levels. And for men, there should be an established level balance between testosterone and estrogen, likewise in women. And in some men, there's an imbalance between the testosterone and estrogen levels in the body. It is true that many soy products do have an estrogen type effect, but frankly, you would have to eat a whole lot of soy, whether it's the tofu or other soy products, in order to have that negative effect. But I have taken care of some couples where they may have a vegetarian-based diet and have very high levels of soy in their diet, and sometimes dietary modifications like that can have an impact. And just to follow up on that comment about the diet, for better or for worse, there's not one specific diet or superfood that universally is good or bad for male fertility. Probably the best strategy for male fertility is to have a healthy, well-rounded, well-balanced diet, as opposed to eating high levels of one specific food or one specific supplement to try to improve things.
You know, that makes a lot of sense to me. Dr. Williams, here we are out of time. I hope you'll be willing to come back and be with us again. I have many more questions here, and I really appreciate you taking the time to be with us today.
Would be happy to do so, and thank you very much, Larry, for inviting me to speak to both you and to your listeners.
Dr. Daniel Williams, Associate Professor in the Department of Urology at the University of Wisconsin School of Medicine and Public Health. We'll have him back, and we'll talk with him again. But a couple of really interesting shows today. Thank you so much for listening. And please stay with us. You know what? There are many more good things in store for you right here on the Ideas Network. Stay with us.